Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good afternoon, Rod. I'm well. Here we are on episode 155, and it is the 12th of January. How is the weather with you?
It's okay now. It has been interesting the last few days. We'll get into this in the podcast. I've been touring around the world. I think we've both had certainly lots of ice, maybe not lots of snow.
Yeah, loads of ice, not a lot of snow. And yesterday, I think we were hitting -5 in various bits as I was driving a little bit around the country here. So, yeah, it's been a little cold for our country.
It has been. And I've been in the frozen north. I've been beyond the wall. And I saw it as low as -6, I think, on the island I'm from. And in bits of, wasn't quite Yorkshire, I think it was Leicestershire there was in as well, and it was similar there. There was a lot of ice, there was snow up there, and on some of my travels I saw quite a lot of snow.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting, hasn't it? I think we are not built for this like other countries. I think when I went to Finland, the biggest takeaway we had is, wow, they are definitely built for snow, because obviously they get it every 6 months.
Yeah, well, you only need to look at Manchester Airport this week to see it shutting at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, not a great look for them.
Not at all. And I think that's par for the course for Manchester, frankly, that they do just shut at the drop of a hat. So there we go.
Yeah, same in Bristol. So I think we haven't got the tools, have we? That's the problem.
We haven't got the tools. We haven't got the people. I think it's just one of those things, isn't it? Anyway, we'll talk about how it's affected both of us in our travels later, I think. Shall we crack on and do some follow-up?
Let's do it. So straight into follow-up. Listeners may remember I ordered a Mac Mini quite a while ago now in the Black Friday sale. But for various reasons, it didn't come until this week. So I've got a new Mac Mini, very similar to yours, I think, M4 Pro with Thunderbolt 5. I probably spent, a bit like my iPad, I probably spent a bit more on it than I need right now, but I kind of want to buy it once and hopefully keep it for a reasonable period of time. So I'm quite excited. I've got a 2 TB hard drive in it because I wanted to have the internal storage. And it's awesome. It's a great little bit of kit. Looks really good. I did think the box was quite big it came in there. That was my one initial feedback. I was like, why is it so tall? And then I realised I've got the Mac Mini, and then it sat on top of, and here in the UK, a 3-pin plug and coiled round. And I wonder if the boxes are shorter in other countries where they don't have our plug design. But there you go. But what a piece of kit. Fantastic. You just plug it in and you're off to the races.
Yeah, I think it's a great device. I think I read somewhere it's 20 or 25 years of the Mac Mini, like this weekend.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I guess it started with G4, so that probably is right, isn't it?
It probably is right, and it's always been a great little computer.
And I think we've both owned various guises of them over the years, like PowerPC ones, Intel ones, now Apple Silicon.
Yeah, and I certainly had the first one that still had a CD tray on it and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, 20 years of the Mac Mini, there you go.
20 years, there you go, okay.
Yeah, I've had various iterations of it in various colour schemes, including the one that had the white top. I don't know if you remember that.
That was the original one. That was the PowerPC one, I think.
Yeah. So it's always been a great little computer and continues to be so, frankly.
I love it. I think it's great. I've plugged it in. I'm just getting it all set up. So hopefully this recording will be okay. But what a beautiful device.
I guess we'll find out whether this recording will be okay, but I'm glad you're pleased with it. Mine is putting in the hours, frankly, doing this podcast, editing the audio, editing the video, a bit of light gaming on it, a bit of Windows emulation via Crossover Office and things like that. I'm quite pleased with my Mac Mini. It's taken it and it's got on.
Yeah, sometimes I think, should I have bought the cheap one? And that's the only thing that's gone through my head, because I do think that £600 one here in the UK without any discounts is a really good buy. But I've gone for the more expensive one. Hopefully I've done the right thing.
I think you probably have. It will depend what you do with it after. I know you have a habit of selling on computers rather than keeping them and using them, though I think that will change with your family. And you might need a server in the cupboard at some point, and that's going to be perfect for that.
Yeah, that's why I wanted it slightly more spec'd, I think, because I think it will pay dividends 5 years from now.
Yep, I think that's fair. Second bit of follow-up, and this is something we sort of hinted at before, I think, is that Apple Intelligence isn't really doing it in terms of shifting iPhone numbers. Apple marketed the iPhone 16 very, very heavily based on Apple Intelligence being a fundamental part of it. And yeah, I think Apple Intelligence, unsurprisingly, isn't helping an awful lot in terms of sales. If people want a new iPhone, they want a new iPhone, but the average member of the public hasn't seen anything compelling, and particularly if you had an older model iPhone, you're not seeing any of the Gen Moji or anything that's making a compelling argument now.
I think that's fair. Sitting my wife, she's got the brand new iPhone. She doesn't really care. There's nothing there driving it. My son did say to me, Dad, why don't I get the new Siri, you know, the bit around the outside? I was like, sadly, mate, your phone's too old. He goes, but it's only an iPhone 12. And I was like, yeah, even the iPhone 15 regular is too old. I just don't think there's anything compelling in it. Apple, whilst I think maybe thought people would upgrade for it, they haven't delivered. That may change 100%, you know, this time in a year. But we're just not there now, are we?
We're not there now. And I really struggle to see what they're going to put in there, given all the stuff we've seen with the BBC issues around news stories and all the rest of it. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later as well. It's I think this is problematic. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I think Apple have marketed Apple Intelligence to the hilt and failed to deliver. And it's really disappointing because it's unlike Apple to pre-market something. And I think it's backfired on them. This is why they don't do it.
It's backfired on them massively, I think. Another thing that I think will backfire on people in years to come is the donations that various companies and individuals are making to Trump's inauguration fee. So we talked about Tim Cook last week, and now we're seeing Google and Microsoft also donating $1 million to this. I've also seen that Sam Altman from ChatGPT, OpenAI fame, is doing the same sort of thing as well. And apparently Uber have too.
Ooh, that's bad, isn't it? It just doesn't sit right.
It's hard to know how to respond to this beyond what we did last week. I think Apple doing this and now all these other tech companies doing this are a serious problem.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I feel uncomfortable, I think, with all of it. I just don't think it's right.
And we're going to talk in a bit more detail about why I feel increasingly uncomfortable with the way this is going as well. I think there's a lot of problems with this methodology that's going to affect tech, it's going to affect real life. It's not, I mean, we already see the impact in this country of Elon Musk's tweets, posts, whatever they're called these days. It's on our country and other countries, and it's a direction of travel that makes me very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I would concur with that statement. I think it just doesn't feel right that politics and corporations are getting more and more and very publicly intertwined. And it's probably been this way for a while, but it just feels very icky, and it feels worse than it's been historically.
I agree. It's not a nice situation to be in, and these are only the companies we know about. Who else is having to pay this $1 million? And is this actually going towards the inauguration, or is this going to a Trump company somewhere, or Trump directly, or one of his family? I'd like to know what the... Let's have the follow-up and the due diligence on this fundraising.
I don't like any of it.
We're not even Americans, and it's affecting us.
Yes, I think that is fair. And I don't think I want to know where the money's going to end up. And you've just mentioned it, obviously, but I don't think I'd want to know, because I don't think the answer is what anybody would want to hear.
Something that we do want to know is what's going to happen with Apple Intelligence summaries. We talked about this a little bit last week, but obviously others have picked up since. The joy of when we record is sometimes we get these stories featured before others get around to it. Now Jason Snell has got around to this as well, and I'm sure I haven't had a chance to listen to many podcasts this week because of my attention has been elsewhere. I'm sure all the other podcasts have talked about it by now. But apparently Apple Intelligence summaries might get warning levels, but according to Jason Snell, that's probably not enough.
So you made me think just while you're saying this. This is, Apple summaries are awful, but I got a text from my mum and my, you know, on a chat with my wife, and it said, you know, your mum says guinea pig settling in well and birthday wishes for some shops that she likes. But it's completely misread it, because the guinea pig is settling in at my house, not my mum's house. My mum was just commenting on it, and she's not saying birthday wishes. We were asking her what she wants for her birthday, and it's just completely got the wrong end of the stick on a very simple text conversation with three participants. And then you see this BBC stuff, and I just don't think Apple are really dealing with it. Like, warning labels isn't good enough. Like, fix the thing or turn it off. Pick one.
I don't think they can fix the thing, because this is the nature of the LLMs, as they hallucinate this kind of stuff, and just telling them not to hallucinate isn't good enough. They're still going to hallucinate. So the bigger problem here is they need to disable this. Yeah. I think the developer, the problem is it's at a system level, isn't it? These notifications are baked into the system.
Yeah.
The BBC news app has no ability to affect this. Apple need to switch it off or put front and center. News apps just get it disabled. They deliver two or three of these texts for you in this sort of style, and if you don't like it, they should surface a button that says switch off notification summaries.
Yeah, I think, well, the BBC need to be able to opt out, don't they? Because it's awful. Apple need to work with the BBC to get the BBC in a year's time to run an article going, right, Apple have fixed it, we've worked really closely, we've got it sorted. But they're not doing it that way. Apple are just being Apple.
It's going to harm them in the long run.
Well, yeah, because you've got a lack of trust. That's the problem, I think, that big lack of trust in them. And look, I mentioned just last week, I was getting annoyed with Apple News. And every time I open Apple News now, I'm closing it immediately and going somewhere else because I've lost that trust in them because I just don't like where they're going with it. I think Apple is very much losing its way a little bit.
I think they all are. That we're heading to the grey goo phase of software companies at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Whereas Apple used to be opinionated and didn't do these yucky things, but they seem quite comfortable to do it now.
I think we've got some more yucky things to talk about. So let's segue into the news and let's talk about possibly the yuckiest of all yucky things. Happy with that?
No.
I think that's reasonable. But we still need to talk about it. It's a news story.
We do.
Right. So earlier this week, Mark Zuckerberg came on and announced that Meta was going to get rid of fact-checking across Facebook and Meta platforms. So this includes Instagram, this includes Threads, and this includes Facebook. Now, on the face of it, this is problematic. Surely fact-checking is a good thing. And I remember them introducing a lot of this stuff in reaction to the Stop the Steal part when all the capital raids were going on about right-wing politics and everything that was happening there. So now we have an incoming president, and I'm pretty sure that Trump was threatening to jail some tech CEOs, Bezos particularly, in the light of the capital stuff. But anyway, out of nowhere, Mark Zuckerberg came on, did a video saying that Meta will get rid of fact-checkers, dramatically reduce the amount of censorship, and recommend more political content on its platforms. Right. What does that mean?
They're just doing Trump's bidding for him. That's what that statement just said.
That is exactly what that says. And the root of all this, and I've forgotten the acronym as we go to podcast of what we call it in this country, but in America they call it DEI, Diversity, Equity and Inclusion. And we have the same sort of, it's a different acronym, but it means the same thing. You want the media and you want companies to allow people of different sexuality, races, sexual persuasion, whatever else that is part of that ethnicity, to have a fair chance at getting a job, because this wasn't about giving unqualified people access to things they might not have otherwise. It's just to remove the biases that lots of recruitment, speech, all that kind of stuff have, to make it a level playing field. And the Trump campaign was very much based on the fact that they need to get rid of all these things because it's not a problem. And in fact, it's reducing white middle-class men's abilities to get jobs effectively is where this comes from. So I am a very strong believer in the fact that these kinds of policies are right and proper, and that fact-checking, to come back to where we started with this article, it is part of that. You shouldn't be allowed to promote, I'm going to say it for what it is, hate speech.
At which point is fact-checking ever a bad thing? Like, we are checking the accuracy of these facts. It's not a bad thing, is it? It can only ever be a good thing.
But this is it, I think, and I saw an interview from early in the Trump presidency where somebody was saying there are facts and then there are alternative facts. No, there aren't. Alternative facts are lies.
Because they're not facts, are they, if they're alternative? Like, fact is one of those things. It is a fact. It is definite.
A fact is a fact, and I'm just going to bring up, you know, for us to see from the Verge article, which I'm not going to scroll through too much because we know what Verge articles are like at this point in terms of advertising and things. But I just kind of want to read this out for what it is. Another section that specifically banned making dehumanizing references to transgender or non-binary people as it, so it is, you know, not acceptable, or referring to women as household objects. This kind of speech is now allowed on Meta platforms. And this is the thin end of the wedge. All the social networks, that, with the possible exception of Mastodon, will go down this route.
What's got me is how quickly Meta have come out with this. Their very quick alignment. They're basically on, we are pinning our flags onto Trump, and we are so aligned with them. It really doesn't sit well. I didn't see this coming, if I'm honest, but maybe I've tried to distance myself from US politics.
I think it's a bit naive to think that this wasn't coming based on the steps to which the campaign was going to get this stuff out there. It's the speed of which it happens, I think. I thought the tech companies would push back on this a little bit rather than just falling in line with it.
Yeah, agreed. And you do want your tech companies to be more impartial. You know, they need to obviously progress under different political powers, but you want them to be that little bit impartial, but this is really disappointing.
It's extremely disappointing. So Apple have come out and said that they're going to push back against ending its DEI policies, which is slightly different from what the other tech companies have done. How far that will go, I'm really not sure, though. So, I mean, I find this very problematic. And all right, Apple's pushed back against the shareholders, but it's when the president starts asking them to push back against this kind of stuff, I suspect a different story will be told.
Yep, and they've already, well, Tim has already given £1 million towards Mr. Trump. So you can see where this is going to end up.
And none of it's in a very good place, because there are people from minorities, there are people from other, you know, whatever you choose to do with gender, you know, it's not up to me to judge that, it's not up to you to judge that, but you should still be given a fair crack in the workplace, you should still be given a fair crack for your benefits, you should still be given a fair crack for whatever. You are still a person at the end of the day. And sometimes you do need a little bit of help because of the biases that, you know, the people who have the money and have the ability to employ you or put you on the course or whatever the situation is that where you're coming from, that is unfortunately part of the world that these biases are in place and these policies are in place to stop this happening. And I just, you know, I'm at the risk of repeating myself, I just find it very disturbing.
Completely agree with you. I just, yeah, there's not one world where this makes sense.
There really isn't. And my fear is this begins to impact us here in the UK.
Yeah, agreed. It does feel like this quote, an American saying, there will be some blowback.
Yeah, I mean, we're rapidly returning to a situation where what's next from this? Do we go back to racial divisions as they had in the States up until the 60s? Do we go back to apartheid-type things as was in South Africa till not very long ago? You can see two tiers appearing very, very quickly.
Stop it. It's just all stupid, isn't it? Like, all this good stuff that's come undone because we've come so far and it could just get undone very quickly.
It could get undone incredibly quickly because it took a long time for women to get the vote. It took a long time for sexuality not to be illegal in the United Kingdom and the United States. And we could very quickly go back to that.
Yeah, which is a massive step backwards in my personal opinion. And I don't have the opinion of everybody else, but in my view, that is not the right way to go.
No, I think anybody who listens to this podcast probably is aware of our politics at this point, because you know it's hard not to come out and say what's going on. But this isn't about politics to me. This is about right and wrong.
Yeah, that is it. What is right and wrong? And I guess for some people, their opinion is very different to ours. And maybe we're not right on this, but I don't know. I'm with you. I think you and I are more aligned on this than probably most things we talk about.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Somebody else that's clearly aligned with us is Steve Trouton-Smith, who's always a good commentator of these things, and he says, Meta is very publicly doing what every other company in the US is going to be doing in the near future. This is about as much of a heads up about big tech is going to give. You might want to save some of that anger to channel later, because an awful lot of vulnerable groups are going to be relying on your voice.
It's quite well. He is very well worded, isn't he? Don't you think he's... very succinct, very well thought out, I find.
He is, and this is it. I think he says a lot of things that we're thinking very, very well. So not only a very not only an excellent developer, but it seems like an all-round good human being to me, Steve.
Agreed. I would concur with that. I've never met the guy. I don't know him, but he seems well thought out.
Yeah, he does. And I'm just going to finish this little section here before we're going to move our next thing about Meta's new logo. And I'll just leave this for the edification of the YouTube watchers of us than anything else. But this is a post by Jason Kotke. Please go and have a look at the link in the show notes or have a look at our video on YouTube. But I can't really argue with anything said in that image.
Yeah, say no more.
Say no more. Moving on, next story, but sticking with Trump. He's been talking about a war of words with China and potentially increasing import tariffs. And I got to think this is something that might upset Americans. Apparently his proposed import tariffs might increase the cost of a laptop by up to 68%.
Wow.
Now, I know there's a lot going on with Apple and Tesla and others about how this is going to affect those American businesses. But if you do start a trade war with China, China holds a lot of the cards here.
Yeah, they are definitely on the high ground, are they not?
Very much on the high ground. Let's face it, they have built all these products for the rest of the world at a low price, at low labour costs, and everybody's looked the other way for a long time about how that has gone. And now, I think 68% for a new laptop, that's going to hit your average American. You know, buying the next car, that's going to hit your average American. I don't think they appreciate quite how much stuff is made in China.
Well, Trump wants to make it all in the USA, I'm guessing. But there's a timeline to that event. It's not an overnight activity, is it?
It's going to take more than 4 years to ramp up to the point where, you know, an equivalent to TSMC, for example, which isn't a Chinese company, it's a Taiwanese company, is going to be acceptable.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? I'm not actually looking forward to the next 4 years, and I don't even live in that country.
No, I mean, running on a promise to lower people's grocery costs is it's not a bad thing to go for. You could see our politicians doing exactly the same thing. You know, more pounds in your bank account to spend on things. But the problem is that this affects everything, import tariffs.
Yeah, it does. There's so much that's imported. I mean, what countries other than China make stuff in actually in-house? It's just not a thing, is it, anymore? I mean, we certainly don't here in the UK.
No. So I guess we'll see where this goes at the end of the day. But picking a fight with China, picking a fight with Canada, picking a fight with the EU, none of these things are going to go well. And it's acting like a spoiled child, again, is what this is.
And it's at a time when actually what the economy needs is a bit of stabilisation and not all of this upset, because the economy hasn't really, really recovered post-pandemic and settled down yet.
It really hasn't. But I mean, the more this harks back to what we were talking about in the last story, really, is that getting the big tech on board feels like getting the newspaper companies on board back in the day. And as you said at the start of the show, I think this always has gone on. It just feels like it's out and more vicious than ever at this point.
Yeah, agreed. Maybe I'm more aware of it now. And I'm more interested in the war of the world economy and stock markets, but it does feel more vicious, 100%.
Right, I'm done talking about depressing stories. Should we talk about some fun, frothy CES stuff instead?
Yeah, let's do it. What have we got first? We've got Bird Buddy. I've never heard of Bird Buddy, but they launch a Wonder camera.
They have launched that, and I've opened the wrong story, so sorry about that. But we're coming to that one next. So this is Bird Buddy, the Wonder camera for watching birds and insects. And this is just a nice little camera you can wrap around a tree or something just to keep an eye on what's going on in your garden. I think that's quite sweet.
I think it's kind of cool. So I do have a Logitech Circle View on the outside of my shed, and a bit for security, but also a bit for, I wonder what wildlife I get in my garden. Sometimes we get deer and moles and rabbits and squirrels. And I kind of bought it because I might see some of that, but it's not really built for that at all. Whereas this looks kind of cool.
They've got this, and they've got an existing product that's sort of integrated with a bird feeder. That's where the Bird Buddy from the name comes from. And if you just want to have an idea what's going on in your garden, I'd love to see a few more hedgehogs and things like that sort of zipping around the garden. I worry that there are not that very many of them left anymore. So I think something like this would be quite good.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. And I think one of the big advancements with tech is that you can now have a camera solar powered, you know, either cellular or Wi-Fi capable. You know, it's a lot more attainable now to have that kind of thing than what it's ever been. So it's quite cool that you can have this. You don't need to run power to it. It's very clever.
It is. And, you know, this is an app. You can set the camera there. You can go and look on your phone. And presumably there's some sort of AI built into it where it does recognize the insects or the birds or whatever it is that it's looking at. I think that's a lovely thing.
Does look cool, and they've got a Kickstarter campaign, so it's going to be interesting to see how well they get through that, but I think this is ace.
I think it's ace as well. I'm not in the market for it, but our next product is ShiftCam from Plank, or the camera is called Plank. It's from ShiftCam, a super tiny SSD that you can bang on the bottom of your iPhone, so when you're doing your high-res video, you can just plug into this into the USB-C port at the bottom and just record straight into that.
That kind of makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That's got to be a great way of offloading your content.
Yeah, it does mean you can buy the smaller iPhone, you can bang a 2 terabyte, you know, SSD into the bottom of it and record straight from your camera app into this with whatever LUTs or whatever it is that's supported. So I think this is cool. It's $200 for the 2 terabyte SSD. Awesome.
That seems all right price, I think, for what that is.
How much is a 2 terabyte iPhone? Can you get a 2 terabyte iPhone?
I don't think you can, but if Apple did 2 terabytes, it's going to be, I mean, the upgrade on my Mac Mini was eye-watering. I could only imagine what they'd do with iPhone tax on top of that.
Yeah, so I think this is cool. I think it's quite integrated. I have seen people that have got holders built into the back of their iPhone from when they're shooting things. We were talking about 28 years later, the movie that's shot on iPhone 15s. Something like this, if you're going to be shooting a lot of video, and let's face it, these things take a lot of takes. It takes up a lot of storage. You could imagine if you were recording, I don't know, a road trip or something like that, you could just bang one of these on your phone and off you go.
Yeah, I think it's a cool idea. And especially, you may end up with a USB-C iPhone that's a spare, easy to upgrade next year or whatever, and therefore you could stick two terabytes on it and do your vlogs and, like you say, record footage and things with it. It seems to be a no-brainer.
Yeah, and if you really want a lot of storage, you can attach their USB-C hub and then bang two of these things on.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, actually. I quite like it. It is amazing that the iPhone's finally becoming a computer.
But a long time ago, the Mac shifted from being the center of our universe, didn't it? That was always the iLife dream of Apple. The Mac's the center of the universe. You put all your music, your photos on it, and then you sync it to your iPod and things like that. But obviously, that's changed now. And really, the phone is the center of our universe because it knows where we are. It takes most of our photos. It's our primary messaging device, and everything else now syncs to it. So this makes a lot of sense.
Yep, I agree. Something else that I was slightly surprised to see is there's always lots of monitor announcements at CES, and LG have announced a 6K display with Thunderbolt 5, and that's as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I would concur with you on this. I'm partially in the market for another screen at some point, but I'm waiting to see what Apple come out with a studio display, because we've got to be due another one. But to see LG come out with an ultra-fine 6K, and with 120Hz refresh, Thunderbolt 5. I've just bought my new Thunderbolt 5 Mac. It would be great to have some Thunderbolt 5 peripherals to take advantage of it. So, yeah, super interested to see what they come out. But it looks pretty good. I've actually got an ultra-fine screen here that I was using on my previous Mac. And do you know what? I've had it for donkey's years. I bought it secondhand, and it has been fine. It was the base one. It was a 22-inch base model LG one. It didn't have a camera in it or anything. But do you know what? In all the time I've used it, I've never had a problem with it. And I know I'm probably a very lucky person, but some of the LG stuff I think is good, and hopefully they've had another swing at it and done a good job. So I think it looks pretty cool. It does amaze me, though, how much everybody just copies Apple's design aesthetic.
Yeah, I see that, though. Let's face it, there's not many PC users are going to be looking for a display like this. It's going to be video professionals and, you know, editors and those kinds of people who probably want a Mac. And people who want it to match their Mac want this kind of look.
True.
Let's face it. So I'm not surprised they've kind of gone with that design aesthetic to do it. And it does look like the Ultra Sharp X, it's not an Ultra Sharp, the XDR Studio display is what I'm thinking of, which is an 8K display. No, it's also a 6K display,
6K,
isn't it?
6K, 32 inch. So it sounds like a very similar, it's probably not the same panel, but very similar. But also that one is coming up to being 6 years old this year because it was released in 2019.
Yeah, and has a very low refresh rate and is extremely expensive. So
and doesn't come with a stand.
Yeah, it's £999 if you want a stand with it. I presume the LG one will. And I think one of the criticisms of the previous ultrafines is they're not the most stable. If you put them on, their stands are a bit wobbly. So I think if they put a better stand on this, or have better mounting options for a VESA or desk mounts or wall mounts or whatever else you're going to get with this, and it comes in at under, pick a number, £3,500, it's probably a really good buy.
Yeah, I think so. I'm keen to see what this launch is like. I'm looking forward to some reviews on it. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in this. I don't know if I want a 32-inch display. It seems a little big. This is the first time recording with you on my 27-inch studio display. Normally I use the 22. And already I'm feeling like there's loads of, yeah, I've got it in max room, but there's loads of space. I don't know if I need more, but I don't know. Maybe I could be tempted.
So I kind of miss my 32-inch ultra-wide. I do like my 4K display. It's a little sharper than what I had before. But I am missing just the sheer real estate I had in the 32-inch. So I think 32-inch is a sweet spot.
Yeah, quite possibly. I use a 4K in my office. I use a 5K here with my iPad. And I can flip between the two on my iPad with no problems. But obviously on the Mac, you can have way more than four windows open on any one screen. So, you know, it's great. I've got loads open. I've got about 10 things open. So I could see 32 working. The only problem I had was, am I going to be twisting my neck a lot to look at it? But actually, it probably would fit my field of view.
See, I'm selling you on this. Another thing I might sell you on, and this is back to 27-inch though, is that this is an article in The Verge. I'm waiting for the advertising pop-up. Everyone's favorite office monitor is getting better. So this is the bog standard 27-inch 4K, which I'm sure your office has, my office has. They're everywhere, 27-inch 4K monitors from Dell. But it's gone up to 120Hz refresh rate, whereas before it was 60Hz. So actually, that's in the realms of gaming now. It's good for 4K. If it comes in at a reasonable price, you know, $699 in this case, and Dell will discount it really quickly. I think that's a really interesting display.
Yeah, I've actually got the 60Hz version of that screen sat on the floor by my feet as we speak. And it's been a great screen. It is a really good screen. This sounds amazing. And yep. It is a good price point.
It's a great price point. 140W power delivery, that's going to charge your laptop up really quickly. You're going to be able to have lots of things on the bus there. You know, blacker blacks, all the things you want from this. This sounds like a really good deal, particularly maybe in this case, if the 32-inch version is the same for 120Hz as well, this is a lot of display for the money.
It's a lot of display. And you've got a hub in there. You know, you've got Ethernet, you've got USB-A, looks like some USB-C, and you can probably flip input, which obviously you can't do on the studio display. So that, to me, looks like a fantastic display.
I mean, it's a serious limitation of the studio display. It's why I don't have one in front of me now, is I want to be able to, when I bring my work laptop home, I want to be able to change input to that, and then I want to be able to use my desktop. And I can't do that on a studio display.
I must confess, having my Mac Mini on it, and I have to pull the cable out to put it into my iPad to use it in work mode, I kind of do miss, I just want to be able to push a button. That's a little, it is a limitation.
And is it so bad to want an off switch and a monitor?
I can live without that. but agreed.
Sticking with Dell, and I just thought this was a slightly ridiculous story, as they've obviously had the Apple bug slightly. They're going to get rid of some of their branding and some of their iconic computers. So they're going to stop making the XPS.
Well, you say they're going to get rid of some of their branding. They're pretty much dropping all of their branding because there's not going to be no Latitudes, no Inspirons, no XPS. Like, what?
I got to think this is one of the most mental things I've ever seen a computer company do, keeping in mind all the nonsense we've been talking about Apple recently. But yeah, as you say, they're getting rid of Inspiron, Latitude. I presume they're not doing it in the server lineup, but, you know, XPS. And to me, when they released the XPS brand, that's when Dell became... They moved from being just a manufacturer of computers to an excellent manufacturer of potentially cool computers. The XPS 13 was a terrific laptop.
Yeah, agreed. And the XPS name's got some cachet with it. It's just a bit disappointing, isn't it? Why can't people have their own ideas? I just don't really understand it. And you're going to get all these in three tiers, Premium Plus and the base model. I don't know, Dale, what are you doing? Have your own line, be proud of your heritage.
Yeah, and when, you know, you or I were advising somebody to either buy a computer corporately or to buy their own personal computer because they're not going to buy a Mac, what'd you get? What do I get? Oh, you need a Dell Pro Plus. What does that mean? I have no idea what that means. And just to be clear, the way they've separated these are, there is Dell, Dell Pro, and Dell Pro Max. But within those categories, you have Dell, you have Premium Plus and Base. Am I reading that right? Yeah. So that affects, God knows what that affects. I haven't gone through the configurator, but there's too many tiers here with not enough words, if you know what I mean. I don't know what a Dell Pro Max Premium is. Is that like the absolute best of the best with the most RAM? Can you then go and configure it further? I don't know.
I just don't think any of this is good. That's what I'm going to go with. I don't get it. Have your own ideas. Have your own identity. Have your own heritage. You've done that for so many years. Why now change? Apple are not great at naming things. Knock it off.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to copy one thing about Apple, the naming isn't the thing to go with.
I completely agree. Nobody in Apple nobody in the Apple ecosystem likes their naming conventions. So I just can't believe this. But also, it's unashamedly stealing Apple's branding. That's what I find really bizarre.
Yeah, we've talked about Dell struggling a little bit. I think they know their place and they're about to sort of try and jump out of that place, and it's not going to stand them in good stead, I don't think.
No, I'm normally quite a Dell advocate. We use them in my corporate life and on the whole, pretty good devices and recommend them to people. But this is, it just seems a bit, I don't know, just sit right with me that you've literally just ripped off somebody else's idea.
Samsung have been doing it for years. It hasn't done them any harm.
But in some ways, I quite like what Samsung are doing. They do the year branding, which nobody else is doing. The numbering they do, you know, the S24, I don't even know what the numbering is, but I quite like some of the stuff they've done. They've done their flip and their folds. You know, they're doing their own thing. I quite like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think Samsung used to copy Apple. Now they do their own thing.
because they're strong enough in the marketplace.
Yeah, whereas Dell were already strong enough in the marketplace, so what the hell are they doing?
Concur.
I would never buy a Hewlett Packard anything at this point. I would never buy a printer. I would never buy a computer. I would never buy one of their... because they lost their way. They were a company that used to have their own innovation, their own ability to create things that were interesting products, and I feel they lost that. They took their eye off the ball on all their ranges, and it's not a company I'd ever recommend to buy anything anymore. Dell, however, was one I did.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, we're labouring the point. Should we do some media?
Let's dive into media.
Struggled with media this week, I got to say, because I haven't had a chance to watch many things, and it's been a bit light at CES. However, one thing I did see at CES is VLC Media Player. Now, I've used VLC Media Player for years. It's a great Swiss Army knife. It's the app that's a traffic cone that will play a file that nothing else will play, and they're bringing in AI subtitles. And actually, this is a use of AI that I think is a good thing.
I 100% concur, I think, on this one, in that VLC is amazing. I've used it equally. It was always that player you'd use because it would just play whatever you chucked at it. This is a great use of AI. I want to see a bit more of this. I'd like to see where they use AI to do a bleeped version that's a bit more sanitized for children. And why haven't we seen stuff like that? I think that's useful. Hopefully easier for AI to get right and have less hallucinations. But no, this is great. And it's great VLC are doing it. I can't believe other companies aren't doing this.
And they've said translation is going to be supported as well. Not all of the world speaks English, so live dynamic translation? Amazing.
Well, and equally, if you were watching a French film, it could auto-translate it into English for you. So I think this is fantastic.
Yep. So well done. Good use of AI. Well done, VLC.
What a great app.
Yep. Something that might not be so great, and having sung LG's praises a minute ago for the quality of their monitors, and I have an LG TV, and I believe you do too.
100% do. We're not sponsored by them, but they are great TVs.
But they might be about to become less great because they're going to add Copilot to their TVs. What the actual hell?
Yeah. When I saw this, I was like, I can't imagine anything I'd need any less than Copilot on my TV. I find the trick is when you buy a TV, don't put it on the internet. Maybe upgrade the firmware, unplug it, and just use it to connect to other cleverer boxes. That's my personal view. I don't use any of my TV functions.
I connect it to a guest Wi-Fi network that doesn't have access to the rest of the stuff. I get the firmware update. I disconnect it. In 6 months, I connect it again to see if there's any new firmware updates, and that's as much as I do with it.
But I'll be honest, most of the firmware, if you're just using for inputs, doesn't really give you anything.
Yeah, it doesn't make an awful lot of difference, does it? A TV needs to be a dumb device. I don't want Copilot on my device. I don't want it reporting back on whatever I'm watching to wherever. And that, we're going to have a show about that at some point, about the reason TVs are so cheap these days is because they watch what you watch and they report it back.
Yeah, that's 100% it. But no, like you, I think I just use mine as the... I just want the panel. I don't even want the sound necessarily from it because I use a soundbar or I've got speakers. And I just want it to be able to serve up some inputs and quickly do that. That's all it's got to do, in my opinion.
And I turn off things like motion smoothing. Now, one thing that drives me incredibly mad is motion smoothing. I don't want any interference with my picture, really. I don't mind it interpolating quite so much. If it's a very low-res thing that it needs to be upscaled to 4K, fine, I don't mind that. But I don't want it to smoothly transition me between scenes or between actors, and then you get that point where it races to catch up and all the rest of it. I was in a pub the other night, and they had all the TVs in there and still had motion smoothing on. It was driving me mental.
It probably upsets you more than me, but I am struggling with one of my TVs just to get the picture to be the right colour. And I bought a cheapish one, and I was like, I should have spent the extra £200 and got the one that would have the better panel.
The point of that, though, is I don't want extra things. I don't need extra things like Copilot built onto my TV. Put the smarts in the apps that I choose that I want to have on there and just make the best possible quality viewing thing that I can have. Copilot ain't going to help with that.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm angry about this one. I don't know why.
Fair enough. Something I'm not angry about is Bad Monkey. I've continued to watch it. I think I've only got 2 episodes to watch in the season. I know you said you weren't that bothered about it. It's absolutely terrific. It's one of the best things on Apple TV.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with me lately. I think I'm struggling to get into new stuff. Do you know what I mean? I'm struggling to find a TV show and really settle into it. I'm glad you like it. I started watching it. I thought I'd enjoy it. I don't know. It just didn't sit with me. Maybe I wasn't in the right frame when I started it. So when I'm in the mood, maybe I'll give it another run.
I think it's worth a spin. Genuinely, it's up there in the top 3 or 4 Apple TV things that I watch. I'm excited about Severance coming back next week, but I'm going to be really sad to finish Bad Monkey.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm looking forward to Severance, actually. I do want to go and rewatch that. I must confess, this week I went and watched Senna on Netflix. Don't know if you've seen that. Obviously, I'm a big motorsport person. I started watching it. I wanted to love it. Pitch quality is amazing, but it looked badly dubbed. It was just annoying me that how out of sync the lips were with the words coming out of the speakers, and it just didn't sit right, and it was really frustrating. So I bounced off it quite hard, if I'm honest.
Is this a new Senna film?
Yeah, it's a Senna fictionalized serialization on Netflix. The one that's the one you're showing now on the screen. That is the one. So it looks cool. Some of the racing looks great. It's obviously Senna, immensely famous Brazilian Formula One driver, tragically died very young. And this is right up my street. It looks amazing. Some of the acting looks great. Some of the way he's standing and doing things really shows that they've tried to be faithful to Senna himself. But I was just really disappointed with that. I just couldn't quite get into it.
So do you watch things dubbed? You do the subtitles?
No. When I say it looked like it was badly dubbed, it was all in English, but it just didn't hook up properly. I don't know what they did, whether they had the actors do the acting and then added voices afterwards or what, but it just didn't sit right with me at all. And I had a couple of runs at it to see if my TV was out of sync, but it just wasn't right. So I was a bit disappointed.
That is upsetting. I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score for it now as well, and it kind of bears out what you're saying. 33% from the critics and 88% from the audience.
That's a bad score. For something with Senna and the story, it's not good.
It's not good. Do you want to tell us about The Apprentice instead then?
Yeah, so I've put the link in the show notes to the Rotten Tomatoes for The Apprentice. I've been wanting to watch this for a little while, actually. It's got Jeremy Strong in it, and... oh, I should know who the other gentleman's called who actually plays Donald Trump. His name...
Sebastian Stan.
And fair play, I think they've actually done a good job of making him look Donald Trump-esque. So this is about Donald Trump sort of getting going off the back of his father's business, becoming his own person, leaning into his lawyer, who is played by Jeremy Strong, off Succession. It's quite good, but I quite like films about something that's really happened. It was quite good, but it wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be, if I'm honest. And I normally quite like a drama, but I recommend it. It's worth a watch to see how Trump got his start in life and built all these towers and plazas and whatever else he's done. Obviously, quite popular now, but this was not endorsed by Trump in any way, shape or form. So it was a little interesting from that side of it. But recreated New York, I thought, quite well over the 60s, 70s sort of era. It was really interesting.
See, the fact that it's not endorsed by Trump makes me want to watch it. When I saw this link that you put in the show notes, I thought this was about the Alan Sugar thing coming back into the UK, so I'm quite glad you've done something different there.
No, but this is a film right up my street.
Yeah,
and I like enough. Usually businessy sort of films, like Dumb Money, Blackberry film that we've discussed, Margin Call, etc. So it's worth a watch if you can pick it up on something. I bought it off of Apple TV. I couldn't find it anywhere to stream, but generally quite enjoyed it.
Have you done Enron, the smartest guys in the room?
I have not.
I think that's worth a watch. That's my little recommendation for you.
Okay.
Not in the show notes. Unexpected, that one, but we can move on. Should we do some games?
Let's do some games.
So, not a lot in games, as always, but I just thought this was interesting that the incoming, well, not even the incoming US government, has classified Tencent as a Chinese military company. So, Tencent are a games company. They made they own League of Legends, Riot Games, Path of Exile, and others. And they've been classified as a military company, and I think that's fascinating.
They've been classified as a military company. What?
It doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me. I guess if you make a lot of software and that software is installed on governmental or departmental computers, then that's potentially an attack vector. I don't think it has any repercussions other than being classified as a military company, and the sort of you get a higher level of watching over you. It doesn't mean that the games aren't sellable in America, but I think this is a fascinating development.
That's what I thought you were going to say. I was like, does this just bring a little bit more governance to it? Because they're just a bit more cautious, I guess.
Unlike other lists maintained in the US government for sanctions or export control measures, inclusion in this list relates only to US defense procurement, which does not affect the business. Well, why do it then? Do you buy a lot of games on your Department of Defense computers?
You'd hope not, but it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Maybe they do. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's their simulator.
doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Something that does make a bit of sense to me as iPhone gaming becomes ever more popular, also from CES, is a MagSafe game connector, which makes on-the-go iPhone gaming easy. So this just snaps onto the magnet on the back, and it gives you a nice sort of PlayStation-esque, Xbox-esque game controller that's sort of quite minimal and goes on the back of your phone. I just thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it does. I always want things like this, but I'm always put off because phone sizes change and things move all the time. But this actually looks kind of cool.
It does. I also really like the name of the company. I think Oh Snap for a MagSafe company is one of the best, snappiest names I've ever heard.
Ba-boom. Very good. Yeah, I don't disagree. It's nice to see something a bit different. That's the only thing that puts me off buying these sort of add-ons, is that the phone just changes and I change my phone too frequently.
I guess it depends how much they are, but if you're passing the phone down to your kids and your kids play games, this might not be a bad investment.
That is fair. My kids will be getting my phone after me.
So there you go, just a thought. And last story in games, and I just this is one of these things that I can't quite wrap my head around. So back to large language models and chatbots again. NVIDIA is selling its next generation of AI within the gaming environment. It's touted at CES, teammates that are based on a higher standard of AI, effectively, which I thought games companies had been working on for quite a while, frankly. But they showed PUBG. PUBG is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's a battle royale survival thing. And you could have a teammate in this, so you could play the multiplayer one, where your teammates would actually be helpful to you. So if you didn't have real friends to play with, you could bring some of these AI-based teammates along with you. And surely that's hacking, isn't it? If you had some really smart teammates who could carry you through the game, that's hacking. That's a problem for a game.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe if you're doing it in single player, but then PUBG's not a single player game, is it? It, by its very nature, is a multiplayer game.
Yeah, so play with your friends or play by yourself. Don't get some AI thing to help you. Don't get it.
Yeah, it's a bit odd.
It is a bit odd. And these things are competitive as well. Cheats like this, like aimbots and things like that, are the bane of most computer games' lives. Call of Duty is infested with cheats at the moment on the PC side of this. So introducing AI-based agents into the game seems like a really bad idea.
Yeah, do you know what? I was talking to some colleagues at work. They've given up playing Call of Duty because of all the cheating that's going on it, which I was really surprised at because they're normally on it a lot and they play together as a group, and none of them have been playing it because of all the cheating.
Well, Apex Legends, which is another Battle Royale game, which I think I've talked about in the podcast before, used to allow Linux and Mac gaming and Steam Deck gaming, which it was really notable for having a Linux-dedicated version of the game that you can get up and running. And they banned it and the Steam Deck compatibility because of all the cheats that... Because it wasn't kernel-level cheats on Linux, because of the way Linux is set up, it was easier to cheat on Linux. So the real sort of cheaty boys were actually installing Linux and just to play Apex Legends just to win. Therefore, they banned the whole operating system.
Wow.
So you're doing that, but at the same time, it doesn't matter how sophisticated your cheats are, even for a game like Call of Duty, they're still going to cheat in it. So it feels like cutting off your nose to spite your face, really.
Yeah. Ugh, it's bonkers, isn't it?
It really is. That surely we can do better these days. If somebody is consistently killing everybody they come across and not taking any damage, chances are they're a cheater. You don't need very sophisticated anti-cheat to get around that.
With all our AI capability, can we not just be a bit smarter about it? I don't know.
It's madness. Anything else in games?
No, sadly not. Gaming's just completely fallen off my radar, and I apologise.
I have been playing a bit of XCOM 2 again, just for old time's sake, but I think I'll talk about that next week.
I thought I was the one that played old games.
I love a bit of XCOM 2, what can I say? I'll talk about that next week. Should we do a main show?
Yes, do it. It's all about
you. It's all about me, but I'm hoping to get some questions to make it interesting. So I bought a new car.
Ooh.
And we talked about it on the podcast, and it wasn't one of the options I originally sort of highlighted as being there. Or maybe it was, and I discounted it because of software problems.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't know what was on your longer list, but I can understand that because there has been a bit of noise around Volvos and software lately. But when you said this car to me, I was like, oh, actually, I can kind of see why you've gone for it, and it does look cool.
And rightly so, there should be some noise about the software. I'll talk about that too. But what I bought was a Volvo EX30. It comes in a couple of levels. It has a single motor version that has a 52 kilowatt hour battery or something like that, the core edition they call it, which actually in some ways is the most interesting car in the range because it uses the new battery technology that doesn't have memories and doesn't discharge in the same way. But because it's a small battery, nobody's buying it. But it's the most environmentally friendly version of the car.
Okay.
So that's interesting. There is a twin motor, sorry, there is an extended range version which has a 69 kilowatt hour battery that's allegedly good for 295 miles. I say allegedly because we all know electric cars don't go as far as they say they do. And then there's a performance version of the car which is also twin motor that has the same 69 kilowatt hour battery but doesn't go quite as far because it's heavier because it's a twin motor. So the longest range version of the car is the extended range single motor. And that's how it goes. There are then three spec levels as well. There's Core, which has almost nothing on it. There is Plus, which has nicer seats, stuff like that, slightly high upgraded interior trim. There's actually not a lot of difference in terms of the technology inside of them. And then there's Ultra, which is all the bells and whistles and will park for you and has electric seats and blah, 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 blah. But the fundamental is you get a car with five seats, not a very big boot, but is all dominated by the Android automotive screen that's in the middle of it and the technology that's around it. But I think it's fair to say it's quite a pretty car as well.
Yeah, and I hope you don't mind me saying, but you've got the black one, and I think actually in black. Oh, could you click on black just there in the middle of your screen? I think that'd be quite cool because that's what you've got. I think it looks quite cool in black.
I think black is the coolest colour. I would also have considered the blue. I thought the blue was quite nice as well, the cloud blue.
It's hard to see that it's blue there, if I'm being on just the way maybe the screen's coming over to me. But the black, I think, looks awesome. I think it's a good-looking car.
It is a good-looking car. It's certainly not a big car. When I was parking and around other EVs, when I was charging and things like that, it's by a long margin one of the smallest EVs you can get, I think. And to put it in terms people might understand, it's a hatchback that's slightly higher up, really. It's sort of a golf-sized car.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not massive, is it?
It's really not, although it is still quite heavy. I think it's still just under 2 tons, as all EVs are.
Wow, yeah. I mean, my car is 2 tons. You can certainly feel it.
Not so much with this. Having driven the Tesla that was about, I think the Tesla was heavier than this as well. It's the batteries that weigh, unfortunately, and the motors that weigh. So I've talked about the specs. What did I get? I bought in black, as you've said. I bought the performance version with the twin motors and the bigger battery. So that's what I've got. So I've got the highest possible spec it is to get.
Which sounds pretty cool, because that means you get everything.
It means you get everything. Realistically, it means I've got a nice panoramic roof. It means I've got some of the nice parking features. I've got a 360 camera when I put it in reverse, and I'll do the parking for me as well.
Wow, okay. That's pretty cool. Do you think you're going to use all the, you know, the automated stuff?
I'll come with that. You can see the cost saving. You can also see the environmental credentials of it. So I can't find it on the website, but they claim it's got like made out of 65% recycled materials or something like that. A lot of the car is made out of other bits of car. My seats, for example, which are a mixture of fake leather, vegetarian leather, and denim, are people's jeans. You know, they're old jeans that have been recycled.
That's quite cool.
The dashboard is made out of recycled plastic bottles. Stuff like that is all very, very cool that's built into it. Even a lot of the steel in the car has come out of other, or whatever the metals in the car have come out of other things. So the environment is not as good as making use of an existing car, of course, because the most environmentally friendly thing is the car that was already there. But in terms of new cars, I think it's one of the most environmentally friendly you can get.
Yeah, that's quite cool. And I'm not surprised Volvo is a company I think you'd expect to do more in that area than some.
Yeah, so I think that's all fair. That's kind of the feel of the car. That's what I bought. I bought one that was an ex-demonstrator from a company in the north of England called Stoneacre. They're not a sponsor of the podcast, but, you know, I had no problems with Stoneacre. They were very easy to deal with. Buying a car a long, long way away from you, I think, is easier than it ever used to be. I saw the one I wanted on Volvo's website. I said, can I buy that? Will you throw in? All I wanted was a mat for the back, so if the dog jumps in the back, it doesn't mess up the boot. And they threw that in as part of the purchase price, and that's as far as my haggling went. And that was it. I had a new car that I had to go and collect.
Good haggling, Rod.
Well, I find that a lot of car dealers aren't very open to it these days. I did try to pay a little bit less, but they weren't having it, so I settled for the mat.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So that was it. As we've talked about at the top of the podcast, however, the weather hasn't been very good. So my plan was to get the train up I'd spend one night in Cleethorpes, near Grimsby, which, if you're not familiar with the UK, is sort of the top right-ish corner of England before you go across the Humber Bridge, before you go over that river there. And that's the first time I'd been to that part of the world as well.
Yeah, fair play. You managed to find the car you wanted that could scarcely have been too much further away from you.
I could have been in Dundee or something like that, I guess. But, you know, this is the way of things. So I went up there. I picked it up on Thursday morning, and it was -4 when I collected it.
Oh, that's cold.
It was a bit on the cold side, it must be said. The car was defrosted. I had an interesting setup experience with the salesman. I will say, Volvo salesmen as a whole, I think, are more middle-aged than your average, trying to punt you an XR turbo car of some description. I think they've got a clientele, and, you know, they've got the salesman and they know it, and the sales room are all very cool and Swedish with lots of blonde wood and all the rest of it, so they know their market. I don't think they'd actually sold that many EVs in the north of England. Most people still don't trust this whole EV thing. They want a nice petrol or diesel car, or maybe a hybrid at a push, and the salesman said they hadn't sold that many of them.
Yeah, you can see it, can't you? EVs had a day when they were really going, and we seem to have regressed slightly on that at the moment.
And I blame Elon Musk for this. And one of the reasons this isn't the Tesla is because I blame Elon Musk for this.
Yeah, I can understand that. I was in the same boat when I got my BMW EV, in that I didn't want a Tesla because of Elon.
Yeah, and there I am. I am going to talk about Elon and his company a little bit further as I get down my experiences here. Anyway, I got up the car, and it's almost entirely a digital experience. The first thing you've got to do is install the EX30 app on your phone, scan various QR codes and things like that to get you set up as a driver, and then link to your Google profile if you've got one. And you get all the permissions things from Google saying, "You've just added your car to your account. This is suspicious activity. Did you mean to do this?"
Okay, that's not really what you want, is it, when you just bought a new car?
Well, it says it on the app rather than the phone, rather than the car. So dominating the car is a very large, I don't even know how big it is. They've got a big iPad welded to the center of the screen, similar to a Tesla, except it's in a vertical orientation rather than the portrait one, rather than landscape, I should say, where all the functions of the car are pretty much not as bad as a Tesla. I can still control the window wipers, for example, from a stock, which is a nice thing. But fundamental things like the heating are built into the screen. The navigation, unsurprisingly, is built into the screen. Lots of functions are built into that. But that was the setup process. Here's your car, put in the VIN number, here's a QR code, scan it with your phone. And at that point, a lot of the Google apps that I have became available to me on the car. So, for example, I'm a YouTube subscriber, so my YouTube app appeared there. My YouTube music came into there. Pocket Casts came into there. So in the same way that CarPlay allows you to have blessed apps, Android Automotive has the same sort of thing, where blessed apps can come in. Amazon Prime came on there.
Okay, so rather than mirroring your phone, you've just got native apps in essence, which does make some sense.
It does, and it makes sense that you can't run the Amazon Prime app when you're driving the car. It's only accessible to your brain. Yeah, and quite rightly so. But you're going to spend a bit of time charging this thing. So when you're in park, you can fire up a YouTube or Amazon Prime and watch something, which is pretty cool.
In portrait mode.
And that's probably worth searching on that, because I'm going to talk about it at some point. A recent software update to the car has allowed CarPlay. So you can actually get CarPlay on this screen as well. And what it does is it puts, I should take a picture for the next podcast, it puts the CarPlay window in the center of the display. So at the top of the display, you've still got your speed readout and all that kind of stuff. At the bottom of the display, you've still got the harder controls for the cooling and the heating and the fans and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And CarPlay kind of takes over the middle. It looks a bit awkward, but it works.
Yeah, mine's similar in that there's a bottom bar and it's got the heat controls on it, but I've got really widescreen in mine. It's probably not mine's probably the opposite problem of yours. Yours is tall and thin. Mine's really wide but not very tall, and it could do with a slightly more height on it, I think.
Yeah, and you have a speedometer in front of you, whereas I don't. It's on the screen. There is no instrument cluster in front of you at all. All that's in front of you is a little thing that watches you as a driver and says you're not paying attention.
Wow. Do you have a heads up display?
Ooh. Well, this doesn't bother me because neither the Tesla, so I'm quite used to looking down. Let's face it, with the exception of a heads-up display, you're looking down at a speedometer anyway, or your rev counter. You've always got to. So all I do is I look down and left. You know, it's no big deal.
Yeah, I guess once you got used to it, but it's like driving a classic Mini, because the speedo used to be in the middle of my first car, and I guess I didn't think anything different then. I guess I've just had 20 years since of having the speedo behind the steering wheel, in essence.
Yeah, I think Volvo being the safety company probably should have done a heads-up display. But you can see the cost saving in the car. All the electrics and electronics are down the center line of the car. So, for example, the windows controls are in the armrest, not on the door.
Yeah.
So
it does make some sense. You can see why they do it for economies. And everything's on the one screen. You haven't got two screens.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. You know, I had no problem with the speed being there or indicating what you're in drive or reverse or something like that. You know, all of that kind of stuff makes sense. So that's all fine. And that was the setup. I could have CarPlay if I wanted it. It has Google Maps built into it as default. It has Google Apps built into it that you can download and make use of as you go along. And the car stuff acts like a car.
What happens if you don't use Google?
No, you're screwed.
I was just thinking myself, I'm not a Google products person.
Well, I guess it prompts you to either create a Google account, or you can still just use the basics of the app, because the mapping and all that kind of stuff is still going to use Google Maps. It just won't tie it to your account.
Yeah. And the BMW is the same. You can create a BMW account if you want, and if you don't want to, you can just crack on without it.
So what I did was I was going to Scotland to see my parents, so I picked it up at the showroom when the salesman left me alone, and I put in the postcode of my parents, just to see what the car would do, because I know some of the Kias and things like this are bad at routing in terms of stop here, charge for this long. I want to see what it would do. It picked out two locations for me to charge and gave me a direction, and off I went.
And you just cracked on?
And I just cracked on. Cool. I didn't go to a better route planner. I didn't do anything else. I didn't do any other special preparation other than I put the postcode into the thing and off I went.
Fair play.
So just to talk about this, I probably drove 250 miles on the first day, maybe a little bit more than that, in really quite horrendous weather. So I went from, I'll take that back. It was a beautiful day, but it had been very snowy in the north of England and got increasingly snowy the further north I went. So I had to drive up almost as far as Newcastle to Scotch Corner, and then I hung a left and I went across that pass there and then picked up the A74, and I went up to Glasgow. So I charged three times. I only really needed to charge twice, but I wanted a bit of reserve when I was on the island. So I stopped at GridServe in Scotch Corner, 350 kilowatt charger, put in a bit of charge there, went from whatever it was at, 30% to 80%, and then I set off again. Now, the Tesla, I used to say, would drive for 3 hours between charges, less in the winter, because you know the cold really affects the battery. This does not have the range of the Tesla or even close to it. I'm probably driving for an hour and a half before I need to charge, 2 hours tops.
Wow, mine will go longer than my probably is more in the middle. It wasn't probably as good as your Tesla, but it's more in the middle. And the fact you had to charge three times is quite a lot.
Yeah, it is quite a lot. I didn't have to charge three times. I charged twice. Let's be clear about that. I chose to charge a third time.
Which I can understand. And also with the cold, I mean, that is exceptional, because the batteries just don't deal well with the cold, do they?
They really don't. And it's a smaller battery than the Tesla. Tesla had a 81 kilowatt battery. This only has a 69 kilowatt battery. So I'm not expecting it to go as far.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And it's a smaller car. Let's face it.
Yeah, it's a much smaller car.
It's a much smaller car. So that was there. I then got up the next morning and I drove back. But I drove back to Swansea this time, not back to there. So that is a lot further. It's almost 500 miles to drive, so I'd expect to do more charging. I did have a quick look at a better route planner. A better route planner thought I would have to do four charges. That would have been three in the Tesla, four in this, smaller battery. Fine with that. It actually turned into five charges.
Wow, okay. How long did you do you think you spent charging?
Probably just under 2 hours.
That's quite a long time.
It was, so the weather wasn't great, and the first thing was the wiper jets were frozen. I didn't realise this till I was on the motorway, but I don't know what part of the system was frozen. It wasn't the ends of them. I think it must have been under the bonnet somewhere. I suspect this is a feature of EVs. So they don't have a nice warm engine warming up the fluid that's inside of them, and it was frozen.
Yeah, I have that same problem. I do think it's a massive oversight on EVs that you can't wash your windows, especially when it's very salty, very dry. You can't see where you're going. It's a massive, massive fault, isn't it? And it's common.
Well, you would expect a Swedish car to be able to cope with a bit of cold.
Yeah, 100%.
So just to talk through where I went, I stopped at Ionity in Greenock. Like I said, I just did that third charge the day before, so I'd have a bit of volts to go around the island, and then back off the island again. And then I topped up to, I'm only charging to 80%. I'm not charging to 100%. So let's be really clear about that. I'm not charging the battery up as far as it will go anyway. I go no further than 80. 80 is a good compromise for me between how much I need to charge it versus how long I'll need to spend on the charger, if that makes sense. I then stopped at a Cairn Lodge in Lanark, not far away, and put a bit of top. I didn't need to charge at this point. I could have made my next charging point, but as I was there trying to deal with the windscreen, I decided I'd charge as I was there.
Okay, fair enough. I can understand that. And yeah. I'm the same, by the way. I normally charge to 80. If I'm going somewhere further, I top up to 100 from home, and then I'll just see what happens when I get out and about.
Yeah. So that was a Swarco charger, which I'd never used before. Then I actually stopped at two Tesla chargers. So at the Tesla chargers, which again, I didn't strictly need to speak at the one in Todd Hills, but because I'd topped up, you know, it kind of affected the range a little bit, and I wanted to just check the windscreen and everything was working still. By that point, it had started working. This was a new Tesla V3 charger, which can charge at 250 kilowatts. My car can only take 157 kilowatts, I think. But obviously, the higher the speed, the more you're going to get on board at one point. None of these charging stops, well, except one, took more than about 24 minutes, 25 minutes to get the car from what it was up to 80%. So that was all good. These Tesla ones were fantastic, though, because they were cheap. The Ionity chargers are 79 pence per kilowatt hour. The Tesla one was 49 pence per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, that's quite a change.
Yeah, so sorry, Elon, I am still giving you a bit of money. The fact that it worked with my Volvo, I was very pleased with. I had the Tesla app. I clicked on it. I said where it knew where I was. I picked what charger I was attached to, 3A, 4A, whatever it is, and the car just started charging very, very quickly. I was very pleased with it.
Yeah, I've never used a Tesla charger, I must confess. I assume my car would work fine with it, but I just haven't tried it.
The older ones, I think the charge port's probably on the wrong side of your car.
Quite possibly it's on the
right-hand side of it.
Yeah, right-hand side, right, yeah. How you look at it, but on the driver's side.
Yeah, so mine's on the offside.
Okay.
As a Tesla is. So the older ones have only got very short hoses and wouldn't reach around. So this would be okay, actually. These new superchargers would be okay. You just need the app and off you go, you can start charging. So it was a valuable experience. I mean, it's different from when I had a Tesla. When you have a Tesla, you just rock up, plug it in, and it starts charging. It knows your car's identifying number, and you don't need to mess about with paying apps or anything. You've got a card lodged in the system and off you go.
That's quite cool.
It is quite cool. But this actually wasn't that painful. I said it was in stall 3A. Click, off it went, and I got nice receipts and how long I was there from the Tesla app. So fair play, Elon. This bit's actually working okay.
Normally when I've charged, I just turn up and just do contactless. I don't bother with an app. I just do the contactless thing, let it charge, unplug, well, drive away.
My app of the week might be related to this. So not for the Teslas, but for the other things I've charged here. I then did a second Tesla charger, which was based on a Holiday Inn Express in Preston. If you ever go there, make sure you put your registration number in, otherwise you'll get fined for parking. So that's a top tip. It was also quite cheap. It next then routed me in Worcester to a broken BP supercharger, 150 kilowatt supercharger on Worcester Road in Droitwich. It's been broken for more than 3 weeks. I don't know if that's the Google Maps fault or the Volvo's fault or what the issue is there, but I feel like broken superchargers should not be a thing that appear in your app.
No, they should know about that, shouldn't they?
So I was pretty cheesed off because I only had, I think, 18% at that point as well. So I'm beginning to get a bit twitchy about my state of charge.
Were you sweating a little bit at this point?
A little bit. Not too badly, but a little bit. I used ZapMap then to see where the next nearest charger was, and there was one based in a pub, the Castle Hotel, at about 2 minutes down the road, which is not as fast, 75 kilowatt charger, which took 45 minutes to go from whatever I was on, 18%, back up to there. But it meant I actually had some very late lunch at that point. I think I ate about 5 o'clock, and that charged the car up in 45 minutes. It worked out fine. But there were also two broken chargers in that pub car park as well. They were CHAdeMO ones, not CCS ones. So that's my first experience in all of this trip of actually finding a broken charger, which isn't bad.
Yeah, true, I guess. But you expect more now, I think.
Yeah, I think you would. And I've been neglecting, while we've been talking here, to throw some of these things up on the screen, because my intention had been to give us interesting maps to look at. So this is the one that worked in the Castle Hotel. Nice Korean chicken burger that I had in the class, the hotel. But you can see here, the two CCS ones are fine and with the green on them.
I can't see it. I can only see your Volvo.
You can only see my Volvos because I've put it in the wrong space. There we go. Okay, so you can see green next to them, the 75 kilowatt CCS one. Two are working, but the two 75 kilowatt CHAdeMO. We don't have a lot of CHAdeMO in the UK. It's only Nissans and Lexuses, I think, that make use of CHAdeMO.
Yep. Okay. I always get confused with the different chargers. I've got CCS like you.
you've got most cars in the UK have CCS, and CCS is a combined charge system, CCS, where you have the top part of the charge, which is what you get in your home box, which gives you AC connection, so a slow, up to 11 kilowatts on most cars if you're lucky. Most only take 7 kilowatt from your home infrastructure. And the bottom part, which is a bit of DC charging, which gives you the fast charging on your car. So that's what CCS means, and that's that. Maybe stay with you know it's a combined charging system, and that's how you get a fast charge. So this was fine. You can see it only charges at 75 kilowatt, which is why it took a little bit longer to get in there. The charge curve on my car is interesting. I've become quite nerdy about this stuff. It charges fast. You need to, if it's over 15%. And less than 20%, you get a really rapid charge. I was seeing up to 150 kilowatts in some of the faster charger systems coming in. On this one, it kind of went up and down a bit. I think, you know, some little local power grid wasn't able to supply a constant 75 kilowatts to me, but it worked okay.
Yeah, that is the problem, isn't it? The power, the grid being able to deliver it constantly.
Yeah, and actually, while we're talking, I'm going to throw up the broken one. While we're here, so you can see it. So this was the broken one in Droitwich. 0 out of 2, you can see it's been broken. And if you actually go through the comments and some of the other charging apps, you can find this has been broken for some time. And they have the gall to charge 69p per kilowatt hour for this as well.
Wow. Maybe that's why it's not working.
Well, you would have thought a petrol company, such as British Petroleum, could afford to keep their chargers in service.
Yeah, sure, it's got to be a revenue stream for them.
Yeah, it's not good enough. What I like about these things, though, and it's worth having a look, is it tells you what's around. So when while your car's charging, you can walk off, and in this case, you could go to M&S Simply Food, 28 metres away, which is in the petrol station, and actually get a decent sandwich or something like that.
Yeah, that is quite cool.
It is, but this is broken. So don't go there. And I've left a review on Google Maps to say that it's broken. It's disgusting as well.
Fair enough.
So that's pretty much all I've got to say about sort of the experience of driving it. And I'm going to sum it up because I'm aware that time is passing. The car is lovely to drive. It's nice and warm inside. I have heated seats. I have a heated steering wheel. It comes on automatically. I can set it going in the app to defrost and stuff before I get there. That works really well. It's very Swedish. It's simple. It's laid back. It is an extremely comfortable place to be. I have CarPlay again, should I choose to want it.
Whoop, whoop.
It works fine. The routing, as I've been through, works well. I'd rather it hadn't routed me so far off the motorway for a broken charger. But actually, particularly the Tesla things, I think worked really, really well. The adaptive cruise control, which is something I'm used to from the Tesla as well, I think is a bit more relaxed than the Teslas. I used to get a thing called phantom braking in the Tesla, so the way it works is when you're driving, you pick your speed, 70 miles per hour. I double tap on the drive stalk. On the right-hand side of the steering wheel, that puts it into adaptive mode. It keeps you in the lane, and it keeps up with the car up to 70 mile an hour, or will brake for you. And it's a lot less twitchy than the Tesla's one, despite the fact that's what Elon sells Teslas on. Any questions on that much?
I've never had adaptive cruise, so I probably haven't got much to say about it. I can buy it. It's a £500 add-on for my car in the BMW store. But I haven't done it because it's a company car and it will be going back at some point. But I just use normal cruise control because that's all I've got.
Adaptive cruise control is great and a bit of a game changer, particularly when the weather's not great. You feel you've got another pair of eyes watching out for you as well. And I hold on to the steering wheel, I keep my feet on the brake or on the accelerator pedal, whatever they need to be. And it's just a very reliable thing that uses all the cameras. And I think this still has LiDAR. Tesla have got rid of LiDAR off their cars, so this feels a little more reliable in terms of its positioning. It will brake you all the way down to zero if traffic happens and accelerate off again. So it's quite clever.
It does sound clever. I guess it's one of those things you've got to build your confidence with it.
Very much. And I was very twitchy about it when I first got in the car. But again, having driven it fairly hard for the last, for the 2 days that I had it, I've now got a certain amount of reliability, of trust in the system. Not entirely. I will never entirely trust a robot to make my decisions for me. But it's nice to have that sort of backup. And it does show on the screen where it thinks the next car is, where it thinks the limits of the lane are, all that kind of stuff. So it's not bad at all.
And you can override it.
And you can override it. And the car's really fast. I mean, it's not just a little bit fast. The Not 60's 3.2 seconds or something like that. It's the fastest car Volvo have ever made.
Wow, okay. So similar to mine. Yeah, it's insane, isn't it?
It is really, really quick. So that's the good stuff. I've spent a lot of money on this car. I'm going to be quite critical of it. There's some bad stuff as well. The EX30 app is, I've said a swear word in the notes, but it's terrible. It's absolute garbage. you can set the car heating, but the second you do and the car's in use, it won't tell you anything else about it. So once I'd planned the trip, if I wanted to heat it up again, it just said the car's in use. It wouldn't let me reheat the car when it was parked or charging. It doesn't give me, therefore, any information about how much what the state of charge of the car is while it's charging. I needed to walk back to the car to look at their area screens and things to see what was going on. Rubbish.
That is a bit rubbish.
It's extremely rubbish. The software is flaky. It's got two NFC cards, as the Tesla did, for sort of as keys. Your BMW may be the same. I'm told that the digital car key is coming in the same way that your BMW has and that the Tesla had. It's the stubs of code have been found for it in the latest software update, so I hope that's going to improve things. And then it comes with this key fob thing with no buttons, and the car randomly decides whether it's going to lock or unlock based on your proximity to it, and that's quite upsetting.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, you need to get that right every time. Otherwise, that's annoying.
It's got to be super reliable. And looking at the forums, I'm not the only person. This is the biggest complaint people have with a car, is most of the time it unlocks, but not all of the time it unlocks. And if you're in the rain or something like that, that's quite upsetting.
Yeah, I'd leave that fob behind and just take the key card and hold it to the door, so at least you know it's going to do it.
Maybe. I'm sticking with the fob for now. And I really hope that fairly soon I'll get a software update for it that will work reliably with my phone in the same way that Tesla did, and this won't be a problem anymore.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Interestingly, they found code stubs for iPhones, not for Android, which I think is fascinating.
That is, given that they've obviously aligned with Google.
Yeah, so flaky software. The range is less than the Tesla. The app is terrible. The wiper jets froze, which upset me. It routed me to a location with a broken charger. And that's my negatives. I mean, at the moment, I'm kind of still on the positive side because I think it's a very comfortable, fast car that for 99% of the time when I'm knocking around here doing commuting and all the rest of it, it's perfect for that. I enjoy having it. I enjoy it not being an Elon-mobile. I enjoy the fact I don't see many of them on the road either. You don't see many EX30s around, so I think this is all good things. And just to put into context, having an EV like this, how much it costs you, I looked at my home charging app I had the Tesla up until September, I think. The entire cost of home charging for the 9 months of whatever it was I had the Tesla was £254. So that's almost nothing.
That's literally nothing.
To run a car for that period of time. So if you're not going on these long trips, and it is expensive to supercharge, but just having the vehicle so you can go to Cardiff or you can go wherever, you know, within that sort of sensible range that you're going to be doing it, charging it as you go up to 80%, no more than that, £254.34.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap. It's a lot cheaper than fuel.
It's a lot cheaper than fuel. So just to put it in a perspective that, yeah, EVs aren't perfect, but they're not bad. And just for the benefit of whether this will let me do it or not, here's my car sat outside with a beautifully blanked out number plate. And this is it once it's clean. And hopefully I can do this. And here it is parked in the snow at the GridServe supercharger. And you can see the salt and stuff that's beginning to build up on it.
Yeah. It does look cool. I do think the black looks really cool. I think, yeah, and I like the styling.
And you can see the blue denim seats there as well.
Yeah, I think that's neat. Their sustainability stuff, it's great. Fair play to Volvo.
Yeah, so that's my review of the first couple of days of owning a Volvo EX30. Any questions about any of that?
I think it's good that you already had an EV before, so you understood charging and so on. When I had a loan car from BMW, they were like, we only give EV loaners to people that have got an EV, because otherwise we just get questions 5 minutes after they've left and range anxiety and how do I charge it and all of that. It sounds like the software needs some work. I guess I've not done enough of a road trip. Normally, I plan where I'm going to stop. I don't let the car do it. And that's probably where we probably differ. You trust the technology. I probably trust where I want to go and where I'd like to stop. I think it's a bit frustrating. The software sounds a little flaky, as you've pointed out. It's disappointing, but I don't think it's uncommon.
I think established car manufacturers have got a long way to go with this. Tesla started as an all-electronic app first ecosystem. You know, Volvo, Ford, VW, all of them, and
BMW have been through it.
The ID models have been through it. The first software was garbage that came along with the ID models, and Volvo have had an electric car. They had the XC40 was their first all-electric model, but I think it was based on their previous software that powered their petrol cars. So this is the first time they've gone all in this.
And that is a problem. BMW are in the same boat. One of mine was an early-ish iModel for them, and it is improving. And they've actually hung themselves on the on the Android Auto platform as well for future releases, which mine won't get, but the new ones are all Android Auto with a BMW skin on it.
So I guess, you know, they're all learning as they go, aren't they?
They're all catching up with the Challenger. The Challenger hasn't got the legacy baggage of an established car manufacturer, have they?
Yeah, you're not wrong. So anyway, there we go. Anything else about that, or should we move on and do App of the Week?
How do you think your other half's going to get on with it? Because my other half won't drive my electric car. She wants to stick with a manual gearbox and what she knows, because she's not keen on it. Whereas I think your wife has driven your Tesla. Is she looking forward to driving this?
Yeah, she's had a go in it already, and she didn't like the Tesla. She does like this, even though I've explained she might get stuck in a hospital car park, unable to get into it with the doors locking or unlocking. That's not going to be the case. You eventually get in. Already, I think the fact that this isn't a Tesla and you can turn on the wipers yourself and there is that level of control that is a bit more, I think, is reassuring that it's from an established brand and it's better built. You know, the software's flaky, but there's nothing wrong with the construction of the car.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, and I guess a lot of your mileage will be localized mileage, not driving through three countries in one day.
The doors fit. That's quite a novelty.
Wow, okay. That's saying something.
App of the week.
Do it.
So app of the week this week is Octopus Electroverse. So I have Octopus Energy is my energy provider in the house. So my gas and electricity comes via them. They sent me a card through the post called Electroverse. They have their own app into which lots of the charging networks are built and you get a discount for. So when you tap your card or the app to the charging station, it just comes out of your gas electricity bill. You don't need it. So you don't have that often with public charging in the UK. You have a £100 deposit that sort of charge they'll put on your card for while you're charging, no matter what network you use. So if you haven't got money in your account or whatever, that could be an issue. You don't have that with this Electroverse app. It just comes straight off your gas or electricity, or straight on your gas or electricity bill, and you get a discount. So for example, the Ionity charging I was doing should have been, I think, 84 pence per kilowatt hour, something like that. I was getting it for 72. So, and there's more discounts on depending on what network you charge on. So I was really impressed with this. It just worked. You get receipts within it as you go. Nice little app.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about Octopus generally as a electricity provider. I am not with them, but planning to move there at some point.
Yeah, so I this is something I'd recommend that you get if you're going to stick with the EV lifestyle.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, I should do that. I'm with Eon. They do something similar, I think, but I heard so much good stuff about Octopus. I think I should transition.
Yeah, I think you should. And let's face it, that £250 I quoted for my Tesla for a year's charging, that's with Octopus Energy for charging overnight.
Yeah, a lot of companies do that now where you can, if you've got an EV, you sign up to their tariff where you've got an EV and they give you cheap charging from midnight to 7 in the morning or 6 in the morning, I can't remember the number. And that's what I do and it's really good.
Yep. Thing of the week.
So thing of the week, I've gone for something a bit different. This is a board game called Outsmarted. And my wife picked this up for the children for Christmas. And we've been playing it last week with my 11-year-old son. And it's kind of cool. You can either play as individuals or as teams, and you don't all have to be in one location. So one house has the board, and we say have an iPad with the game logged in, and that's got the license on it. But then you can invite others with iPhones or Android devices to play the game, and you can move the characters around the board, and every time you land on something, you have to ask a question. But all the questions are on the iPad, and you can buy different question bundles and categories. And it's just kind of cool. It's kind of like a hybrid game of a bit of tech with a board game. And we're going to try it out with the family when, you know, the boy's uncle's in Scotland and their grandparents are half an hour away and we could all dial into the same game. We used to do something like this in the pandemic, do like quizzes remotely. And we're going to try this out with them. But it's quite cool. And it's got a wide breadth of questions. So even my 11-year-old's enjoying playing it because you can set them up either as a young person or as a teen. Or you can play as an adult and obviously it adjusts the questions accordingly. But just quite a cool bit of tech slash board game. So there you go.
It's a good idea, isn't it? Sort of bringing the two things together. And I guess you can pay for additional question packs and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, and I bought a bunch. They're like £2-3 a throw. Some of them will play audio clips. Some of them will show you pictures. Some just ask you a question. And they're like in categories, Christmas or logos or, you know, Remember the 90s was one that I bought because obviously it's quite pertinent to my wife and I. So it's just quite well done. And like I say, the fact that we could invite people in other countries to join us and play just seemed quite a nice thing. The kids like a board game. So we're going to give that a go.
Fair enough. Good recommendation.
There you go.
I think I think we can call that a show, Chris.
Yeah, I think so. So if anyone wants to get in contact, Rod is at g5maniac@marston.scot, or he's on Blue Sky at g5maniac.bsky.social, or you can get hold of me at @_cjp@marston.social. You can watch on YouTube by going to our website and click on the YouTube link, or you can drop us an email at wakefromsleep@protonmail.com.
Talk to you next week, Chris.
Cheers, Rod.